You know, singing that song at this time of year, it just it comes to me that some of you, like your Thanksgiving, it didn't feel so thankful, right? I mean, maybe you weren't with your family. Somebody was missing. You lost a loved one this year. Maybe you're sitting alone. Some of you I know probably got a layoff notice just before the holiday. I talked to somebody that happened to already after the first service. And I just want you to know that we know that. We see that as a church. And Sunridge isn't a place where you have to come and fake it and act like everything is good. Maybe it doesn't feel so good to you right now, and that's okay. And we want you to be able to go through that without, like, trying to put on a big Christian smile when you don't feel like it. You know, the words, as we sing them, I know some of us were just, like, singing them with, like, hearts full of thanksgiving. And yet some of you are, like, you're singing it with the determination that only faith in God could give you. And so I want to remind you that God is close to the brokenhearted, and that, you know, our prayer for you from our elders and our staff and our key leaders and certainly as a church, it's like we recognize that, you know, people during the holidays, it can be especially painful. And so we just want you to know that we're praying for you and we're thinking about you during this time, if that's your holiday, if it's not so holly in your holiday. I want to tell you before we jump into our message today that I just want you to mark something on your calendar. It's January 21st. On January, I know, I'm already like, forget about Christmas. We're beyond that already. In January, we're going to launch a series called Deeply Rooted. And it goes to our vision where we've talked about we want to be a church that deepens faith. And that series is going to be a 10-part series accompanied by something that you've heard us talk about but you don't know that much about. It's called Rooted. It's a 10-week discipleship experience would be the best way I could describe it for you. And our goal is to get as many people in Sunridge in a small group to go through that series, go through that study Rooted with us beginning January 21st. It's 10 consecutive weeks. There are 5 daily devotions in each week. It's a lot to ask. But I'm telling you, whether you're just starting out or you're like, you've been a Christian for a long time and nothing can wow you, this is going to be a powerful experience for you as an individual and for our church together. There's power in us doing something together. And we have been working on this for over a year, preparing leaders and going through the groups. And we're going to have as many groups as possible ready for you in different locations and times, and you're going to hear more about it. But I just want you to right now, beginning today, start to pray about how you could rearrange your schedule to be a part of that. It's not just information that we'll pass on to you. It has a 3-hour prayer experience in it. There's risk in that, and I know some of you are like having a heart attack right now. You were all on board until I said 3 hours of prayer. And yet, it also has a serve project where we go out and we're face-to-face with people that are either homeless or children that have faced unimaginable things in their lives and are at risk for many things. It's like, it's going to be a powerful experience wherever you're coming from, and it's going to stretch you even if you think that you know it all. So start praying about that. I wouldn't ask you to do it unless I really believed in it. We're going to tell you more about that as we go forward, but just so that's on your radar. Okay, so if you're just joining us, we're in this series called Relationship Goals, and we're wrapping that up today. I want you to know next Sunday, we're starting a brand new series for December. It's called Christmas Stories, as told by those who were there. And we're going to look at the birth of Christ from the perspective of 4 different people. Not everyone has the same perspective as today. We all look at the birth of Christ a little differently, and so we're going to look at it from 4 different angles. throughout the month of December. But today, we're continuing relationship goals, and part of that series is we've been asking you to tell us how relationships work at the beginning of each service. So you have a yes-no card. You know what to do. Put up a yes or a no, depending on how you would answer these relationship questions. You ready? Okay, here we go. You guys are ready, right? All right, here we go. If you tell him not to get you anything for your anniversary, is it really okay for him not to? Yes or no? Okay, so good to see some of you guys putting up no's. If you put up yeses, you know, we also have divorce care and other ministries available to you. Okay, question two. If you promised a friend you would help him move, but another buddy calls and say they need a golfer for a foursome at Journey, do you bail on your friend, yes or no? Fishing, maybe fishing, okay. Okay, question three. If your roommate is out of town for the holiday, can you borrow their clothes from the closet? Yes or no? No, a lot of no's. College students. How many of you actually borrowed clothes from your roommate in college without telling them? Come on, be honest. No? Okay. Okay, last question. If your boyfriend or husband is cutting his fourth piece of pie on Thanksgiving, should you say something? Yes or no? Yes. Okay, save him from himself. Or give him insulin or something. I don't know. So, thanks for playing along, you guys. I hope that you've had fun doing this. There is a serious side to this because every one of those questions challenges something or kind of gets back to like what I think is the main issue in relationships. So today, as we wrap up relationship goals, we really tried to save the best for last because what we're going to talk about today is the most important thing in a relationship. It's trust. Trust is fundamental to meaningful, lasting, and fulfilling relationships. If you don't have trust in a relationship, you don't have a relationship. It doesn't matter, whether it's a parent-child, it's a marriage, whether it's a partnership, whether it's a colleague, whatever that relationship scenario is, you have to have trust in it. In fact, it doesn't matter how attractive they are, how rich they are, how famous they are, how popular they are, how great the opportunity is for you to join this organization or that team. If trust is absent, it's not going to be any fun. It's not going to last. And if it does last, you're going to be in pure misery because trust is fundamental to all relationships. It's the capital that all relationships trade in. And when I say all, I mean literally all. And even though trust is so critical to our relationships, we have a hard time wrapping our head around it. Most of us, we can't even put our finger on it sometimes when we're uncomfortable in a relationship. It's like there's something there that doesn't feel safe. Usually, that's a lack of trust. And even if we're like to a place where we say, I don't trust you, even if we use those words, like most of us don't really understand exactly what that means. I love what Charles Feltman has written in his thin book of trust. He defines trust this way. He says, trust is choosing to make something important to you vulnerable to the actions of someone else. When we talk about trust, that's what we mean today. I have something it's very valuable to me. And I'm going to make it vulnerable to the choices of another person, their actions, and what they do with it. It might be my car. I'm going to let you borrow my car, and it's important to me. It might be my daughter that you're going to go out on a date with her. And we'll talk about that a little bit today, what that means. It might be my dreams or secrets that I have. Might be my money or some kind of investment, but in the end, trust is making these things that are important to us vulnerable to somebody else. Trust kind of has the yin and the yang. It's like it's got like this two-part mix that has to come together in order for trust to be there. There's the truster, and there's the trustee. So in order to build relationships on trust, I must choose to trust, this is in your notes, and be trustworthy. If we're going to have trust in our relationship, there's two parts of that. I have to trust you. I have to choose to place my trust in you. And then I'm also on the hook to be a trustworthy person. Now, there's a problem with that. There's actually two obstacles to that happening, who I am and what I see. See, we're all wired a little differently when it comes to trust. Some of us are not easy trusters. So who I am, it's like my nature, it's like it affects either because of my experiences or just my wiring, it's like it affects how much I'm willing to trust someone else. And in the first service, I told a story, and Cindy said it was okay for me to do it because I kind of thought I was in trouble. And, you know, we have different wiring. So, like, I'm a truster. Everyone that I meet starts off as an A student in regard to trust. Like, oh, yeah, totally trustworthy. And Cindy's exactly the opposite. She's reserved, and you start off as an F student. So, like, I'm like an A student, and you work your way down or keep it up. Or, and Cindy's like, yeah, you start low and you got to earn it over time. I'm not saying one's right or one's wrong, but it's like we're different. So who I am as a person affects my capacity to trust others, but also what I see. Because we see patterns in people that either lead us toward trusting them more or pulling back and trusting them less. There are losers and users in the world. Can you say that in church? It's like not everybody is trustworthy. And so even if someone starts off as an A student, if they start to erode that trust, eventually they end up on probation in the relationship, and then they could be like out of the relationship. It's the way trust works, these two things. So if trust is that important and there are these obstacles in order for trust to actually occur in a relationship, then we have to recognize that trust is earned, not demanded. Trust is earned, not demanded. You see, you can try demanding it, you can negotiate for it, you can beg or plead for it, but you're probably not getting it until you've earned it. Trust is like love. People can't tell us to love somebody. You can't force that. It's like we give love and we give trust willingly. Sometimes we give it prematurely. Sometimes we give it reluctantly. But in the end, nobody can steal it from us. We give it. The Apostle Paul writes in his first letter to the Corinthians in chapter 4, verse 2, it is required that those have been given a trust, who have been given a trust, must prove faithful. Now, Paul is talking about the precious gospel of Jesus Christ that was given to him and his cohorts to share with their culture at that time. But the principle that rises out of this, I want you to see, is like if you've been given this trust, you must prove faithful in regard to that trust. It is earned, not demanded. And in relationships, whether it's in a workplace or in a home, friction develops when trust has not been earned or someone is demanding that trust. I want the trust. You need to give me the trust. And this person is saying, I can't give it yet. You know, we raised three beautiful young ladies. Well, the beauty is from Cindy. And the amazing part is from me, but not really. And, you know, they all had different levels of, like, how much trust they wanted when they were growing up. And maybe if you're a parent, or maybe even if you're a young adult or you're a student right now, you're experiencing this in your home. It's like we all want our kids to grow up and be, we want them to be independent and make all their own decisions, right? But there's this period in which, like, we're releasing that trust. And the conflict comes when they want more of it than we're able to give. And so there's this constant tension. And I used to say to my daughters, like, look, you earn your independence. You earn this trust. You can't demand it. And it makes for really good preaching. There's still a lot of conflict in my house, you know, working through that. But that's the reason why I mention that is like that's it gets right down to the brass tacks of how we do relationships. We're in this battle. And part of the battle is there because it needs to be earned and it can't be demanded. So what does the Bible say about how trust is earned? What are the parts to trust? I'm going to spend a few minutes on that and then we'll wrap up. Trust, first of all, is about integrity. Integrity. Trust is built when we do the right thing. When people do the right thing consistently over and over and over again. In fact, trust is synonymous with integrity for most of us. It means you walk the walk, you don't just talk the talk. It means doing the right thing, whether it's your preferred choice, whether it's popular, whether it's going to be easy, whether it's going to be comfortable, fast. It's like trust is built on integrity by doing the right thing. And it's far more important than being incredibly attractive or talented or competent. Trust is an integrity, one of the most important things in a relationship. In again, the Apostle Paul in his letter to the Philippians in chapter 1, verse 27, he says, whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. If you're not familiar with this phrase, the gospel of Christ, gospel means good news. And so our relationship with God is based on the redemptive work of Jesus Christ on the cross. We are accepted by God, not because of our performance, but because of what Christ has done on the cross. That is what makes it good news. But I want you to notice that Paul, in helping this church grow, he doesn't just say, hey, enjoy the gospel. Enjoy the good news. He says, whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. So that, you know, in that, you know, forgiveness is not the same thing as integrity. God opens his arms to us in a relationship and says, accept the redemptive work of my son, Jesus Christ, and you will be born again. You become a child of God. But you know, for those of us who have the gospel in our hearts, it's incumbent upon us to live a life worthy of that. That's how relationships work. You know, our relationship with God is like we are part of his family because of what Jesus has done. But part of our fulfilling that is to walk worthy of what Christ has done for us, to reflect that, certainly in our relationships. So integrity is part of our relationship with God. It's part of our relationship with one another. And I want you to notice that Paul says, whatever happens, whatever situation we're faced with, whatever scenario, whatever opportunity comes along, and somebody once said, you know, some of us are just one opportunity away from destructive behavior. You know, so all we need is an opportunity to blow the thing apart. It's like, whatever happens, walk worthy of that. You know, I don't know if you're watching the news, but I think that this is the number one discussion that is happening in our country today. We're talking about integrity. And integrity is an important part of trust. I'm pleased that that conversation is happening. I would assume you are too. I'm concerned at what it appears to be that there's very little integrity going on. And I don't mean that in a judgmental way. I mean it in like there's like a level that has been going on in this country with people, with men and in relationships with women, in like subtle and blatant racism. And we're starting to talk about it, and it's like stuff is coming out. It's like, what has been going on? I'm concerned of how little integrity there is. You know, I'm also concerned about how biased we tend to be and how we hold integrity. Like if that person is one of me or they're my favorite, then they get a bye on all their integrity issues. And if they are not of my ilk or of my favorite group, then I'm going to hold them accountable. That is not integrity. Integrity has nothing to do with your political party, the color of your skin, the position that you hold, whether you're male or female. We're all held to the same standard. It's integrity. And integrity builds trust. Trust is so important in integrity, in a relationship, whether it's a romantic relationship, whether it's a relationship between a pastor and his church, whether it's a relationship in your work, or whether it's a relationship in a nation or an organization with leadership and followers. In Psalm 78:72, the psalmist writes, David shepherded them, that is the children of Israel, with integrity of heart. And you know, that psalm is written at the pinnacle of the nation of Israel's success. They were doing so well because they had a leader who had a shepherd's heart, and he led with integrity. And when David started to step away from having a shepherd's heart and leading with integrity, that's when the nation started to crumble. I think that's true in organizations. It's true in one-on-one relationships and friendships. It's true in every relationship, in relational scenario you can think of. Fulfilling the agreements and the values of an organization as you're a part of it, that's integrity. You know, next Sunday, will be my third year anniversary of accepting the lead pastor position here. And thanks, Mom. So, some of you are like, yeah, man, it's time to move on. And you know, what does a guy that's been here since 1992 at Sunridge becomes a new lead pastor with all of our history? Everyone had all these expectations of what we needed to do. And you know, for me, it was so clear what we had to do. We had to earn your trust. And so, we set about your board, your staff, and myself as lead pastor, like, the number one thing on our radar was to earn your trust, because we're not going anywhere if we don't have trust between us. And so to do that, we've tried to lead with integrity. I want to tell you, your elder board, who are all lay workers, they hold me accountable. These are amazing men. I am so blessed to work alongside them. They have been such a blessing. And, just a week before my third year anniversary, what I want to say to you is, if I ever lose my marbles and I go right rudder, which could happen, when it all hits the fan and it all comes out, you believe the board, not me. That's what I want to say to you, because those are men filled with integrity, and you can't trust one person over a group of men who are filled with integrity. That's very important as we move forward. But in earning your trust, one of the things that we knew would be coming in the future is we were going to ask something of the church. But yet, we couldn't do it without having your trust. And so I just want to tell you, eyeball to eyeball, as your pastor here, one of the things that we want to do in the coming years is we want to renovate our campus. And during December, one of the things we're asking you to do is to give sacrificially above and beyond your regular tithes and offerings to renovate our hallway. It's a $130,000 project, and we're asking you to give a a sacrificial gift. And you know why we're asking you to do that? Part of the basis of why we ask you to do that is because we feel like we've earned your trust. And the trust has been earned by men like Bob Santee, our pastor of business and finance, who keeps every I dotted and every T crossed in our finances by laying aside every month amount of monies. We're building an emergency fund of that'll keep us going for 3 months. That's going to take a few years to do. By laying aside money to do asset replacement, by replacing our roof, which was no fun to do, and it wasn't like the sexy thing to do right out of the chute here as the new lead pastor. But these are things that we did because they're the right thing to do. And so I'd ask you, like when we start talking about renovate next month, I kind of already started talking about it, didn't I? When we do that, it's like, remember that, you know, there's integrity here in our finances. And there are lots of checks and balances as part of that. So I was kind of in the weeds. So come back. You guys okay? Everyone still with me? All right, okay. Let's talk about relationships. Look, you will never regret putting integrity at the top of your relationships, over and above attractiveness or talent or money or personality. Put integrity number one. Okay, second part of trust is related to the integrity, but it's reliability. Reliability is, trust is built by doing what you say you'll do. How important is reliability to you? Just think about in your day-to-day life. You came in a car, and you were trusting it when you got in that car. It was going to start, right? Some of you got like cars that aren't that reliable. How much does that bug you? Bugs you a lot. When you take it to get fixed, and you drive it away after spending $897 on a repair, aren't you hoping that it's fixed, that repairman was reliable? How many of you are going to travel this week by plane, and aren't you hopeful? And it's important to you that plane takes off when they said it was going to take off, that it was going to be there. You're not going to be stuck in Chicago, you know, waiting. How about a restaurant? When you go and sit down in a restaurant and they tell you, you know, your wait's 20 minutes and it turns into 45 minutes, do you get grumpy when that meal isn't what you thought it was going to be? It's like reliability is so much a part of everything that we do, whether it's the mail or whatever. We depend on reliability. Also true in relationships. And trust goes up with reliability, and it goes down with unreliability. For 20 years, I drove an old Tacoma, Toyota Tacoma truck. It was a 1995 Toyota Tacoma truck, and my family made fun of me at a certain point in driving it. But you know what? That thing was so reliable. It always started, well, pretty much. But I put over 300,000 miles on that truck. And all I replaced, this is not an ad for Toyota, this is an illustration for reliability. I put a water pump in it in 300,000 miles, and tires and shocks, you know. And then, like when I got done with it, I didn't just like throw it in a trash heap. It's now in one of my son-in-law's businesses towing a pressure washer. So it's like, I kind of feel bad about that, you know? If it was like the movie Cars, I feel like whenever I see my truck now, she's like, I was so good to you, and now I'm pulling this thing around, you know? It's like, it kind of makes me sad. Especially when I drive up in my shiny Tundra now. It's like, oh. Anyway, that didn't have anything to do with the sermon either, but... Reliability. Sometimes we ask, why don't you trust me in a relationship? Or we say to a boss, like, how come you don't trust me with this? Well, one question to ask would be, am I reliable? Do I make promises I don't keep? With my coworkers, with your mom and dad, with your husband or your wife, with your church, are you reliable? It's so frustrating to all of us when somebody's not reliable. I love how Proverbs puts it, Proverbs 10:26, as vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is a sluggard to those who send him. I love that word sluggard, first of all. That's classic for someone who you can't rely on, but like, it's like vinegar on my teeth. It's just like, it's so frustrating. It's also devastating to trust when we're not reliable. Someone once said, I heard a preacher say that the best ability is dependability. And I agree with that. I think if you're on a team and you do what you're told, you execute, or you show up to practice on time and you're ready to go, you build trust. If you're a worker, and you show up to work on time when you're supposed to, if you're a contractor or you know, like some type of a vendor, if you do what you say you're going to do, you build trust with your customers. If you're a volunteer at a church, you know, we have amazing volunteers here that give so much of their time, and like 95% of them are super faithful. And then 5%, like, it's like you're not reliable. It's like, of all the places to be reliable, you should be reliable in your church. Like, if you sign up, can I get an amen on that? If you sign up for something, you should show up. Sign up and show up. Thank you, six-year-old, whoever that was, you know. Like, reliability. And in a romance, in a relationship with your husband and wife, it's like, are you dependable? Do you do what you say, you said, whatever you said you were going to do? How many instances of unreliability before people don't trust us? You know, I'm not saying that reliability is a perfection thing. I think it's more like a target. You know, when someone does target shooting, the goal is to get them all in the bullseye, right? But nobody's perfect. But if you put a lot of shots in the bullseye, they say, hey, it's a really good shot. But if you're like all over the place and shooting the workers that are walking around, or, you know, then you're not a good shot. And reliability is the same way. There ought to be a lot of dots in the circle of what we said we were going to do. And I think that that's especially important for people who name the name of Christ. So reliability, integrity, last is keeping confidences. There's a ton in the Bible about this, but trust is built by keeping private things private. So integrity and reliability, and then, like, are you like a vault when somebody shares a secret with you? And you've ever been burned by someone that you thought they were going to keep it confidential, then you know what it feels like. Yeah, I mean, you can go back to junior high when, you know, you liked Wendy Friedman, and then, you know, that was your secret, and everybody told, and you were all embarrassed. Did you guys like Wendy Friedman too? I just wonder. Or you shared something in a small group, and then all of a sudden, and you thought it was confidential, and it got out. Or you're at a place of business, and one of your executives, you have, it's not a secret, but it's a confidential matter, and you go out and people are talking about it. Or you're in a boardroom at a church, and, you know, there are matters of confidentiality, or you're on a staff somewhere, or you're part of a counseling team or whatever, and it's like, you don't keep those things confidential that are supposed to be confidential. That erodes trust. Look at some of these proverbs about trust or confidentiality. Proverbs 11:13, a gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy man keeps a secret. And I think it's important that's a pretty confrontational label there, gossip, but that's how the Bible puts it. Proverbs 16:28, a gossip separates close friends. Some of you may have broken a relationship simply over someone betraying your confidence. And in Proverbs 26:22, the words of a gossip are like choice morsels. They go down to a man's inmost parts. That's why we love gossip so much. It tastes so good. It goes down good. We earn trust when we don't share information that isn't ours to share. And also we earn trust when we share information appropriately. but not inappropriately. And you know, there's a way to put a Christian spin on all gossip, right? We can make it a prayer request. Don't tell anybody. That's like, they're going to tell somebody, right? Don't tell anyone but, and that's what was told to you, and then there's like 10 other people that are telling something that nobody else is going to tell. We can relish the bad news of those that we don't like or have hurt us, and then we can get super defensive and super spiritual when it comes to our own information being shared, even though we're sharing somebody else's. By the way, if you have somebody who regularly shares confidences with you that have been shared with them, you do know what they're doing with your confidences, right? Trust people that are like a vault. So it's keeping confidences part of trust, reliability, doing what we said we'll do, and integrity, doing the right thing, regardless of how comfortable it feels in doing it. But you know, trust doesn't come from one big act, one cataclysmic event, and all of a sudden I trust you with everything. You know, it's like you fell overboard on the Carnival cruise, this guy jumps in and saves you, and now you'll trust him with everything, every part of your life. It doesn't work like that. Trust is built incrementally. Trust is built incrementally. It's earned, not demanded. It comes from integrity, reliability, and keeping confidences, and it's built incrementally. Luke 16:10, Jesus said, "Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much." So you see there, Jesus saying these little things that we think are inconsequential or small, these are indicators of our trustworthiness. And in the next verse, verse 11, he says, "So if you've not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches?" And I think it's easy to be super spiritual in church and say, well, you know, I have my spiritual life, but then there's my financial life. And I want you to see that Jesus is saying we can't do that. That how I handle these, what seems to be just worldly wealth or inconsequential small things, these are very much a part of who we are, really. Who we really are. And where our hearts are. You know, I'm a big fan of Brené Brown. Anybody fan of Brené Brown? I just love Brené. And on this idea of trust being incremental, in fact, I gave you two links on your note sheet. I encourage you to watch those two videos. Both are about 20 minutes. One's by Andy Stanley on what we do when I have a trust issue with someone that, like, I had an expectation and they didn't fulfill it, and there's a gap in my understanding of why they didn't. He talks about filling that gap with trust, not suspicion. And then Brené Brown has a whole video on incremental trust. And what she says is that trust is like a marble jar. And we have marble jar friends. So I'm giving Brené credit for this, and I'm telling you to go watch it. And if Brené is listening to my messages, I hope that she'll give me credit too. But she says that, you guys all right? I thought that was a pretty good joke, but anyway. You guys know I'm not friends with Brené Brown, right? Okay. So she says that trust is built by daily incremental deposits into our trust bank. And that, of course, we take things out, right? I mean, that's, relationships work like that. It's not perfection. We make withdrawals from the marble jar. And it's also true that some of the marbles are bigger than others, right? Some things are more important than others. But in the end, we're after a full marble jar in trust. And if in a relationship, if I'm constantly removing marbles, my trust level is going to go down in that relationship. And the goal here isn't to get like one marble and say, look, I still have a marble in there. It's like, you can trust me. The goal is to have the jar filled with marbles. That's how trust works. So we have what we should pursue, Brené Brown says, is marble jar friends, people that fill our jar up. And we should be the kind of person that fills other people's jar up as well. For some of you, your trust has been broken in your relationship. Either you did it, or they did it, or your boss did it. And like, so now there's like a tension. And like, where do we go from there? Trust is earned again, incrementally, by filling the marble jar back up, a marble at a time, with integrity, reliability, and confidentiality. That's how we earn trust back. And we can't demand it. We have to earn it. And you know, depending on how much you've depleted your marble jar in a relationship, it might take a while. And yet, sometimes it's like, we're like, well, you know, I did the right thing once. You put a marble in. Fill that puppy up. It's interesting to me, as we've gone through this series, Relationship Goals, that God talks about our connection to Him in relationship terms. He's a heavenly Father, and we are adopted children. We are brothers and sisters in Christ. Jesus calls us His friends, those of us who name Christ. So the imagery is we have a relationship with God. It's also interesting to me that Jesus said, you trust in God, trust also in me. So our relationship with God is initiated through trust. I don't know if you're just exploring faith or where you are in your relationship with God, but the way our relationship starts with God is by trusting in what Christ has done on the cross to redeem us. And it's from that point on, built on an initial step of trust on our part toward God, who is completely trustworthy, that we start a relationship with God. The things that we've been talking about don't just apply between you and me, between you and your spouse, or at your place of work, or at your school, or on your dorm floor, or wherever you find yourself in a relationship, it applies to that, but it also applies to our relationship with God. Let's pray.